You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Justin Capicotti. Have they been able to find a way to hang on to the ball in the end zone? There's another block. Oh, no! Off to the races. Richard Leonard is going to score a touchdown and flips out in his first CFL game.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we have a mea culpa this week. You and I were derelict in our duties last episode. We forgot a major news story, and that was the passing of Don Matthews. It was a preseason for everyone last week, and it was a gross oversight on my part. I will take full responsibility for this because I'm the one who puts together, usually with your input, but I'm usually one who tries to format the show, and it completely slipped my mind. And Don Matthews, one of the all-time greats of our league and arguably the greatest coach that ever coached in the CFL. So to not respect him and give him his due when he passed was a gross oversight on my part. I apologize to anyone out there who was expecting to hear us talk about him and we didn't. And I take full responsibility. But anyway, we'll talk about it now. Don Matthews, man, I never coached the team I cheered for, so I always kind of hated him. But because he was so good, coach those Argos teams to championships. Then he goes to Montreal and he coaches them and during Calvillo's rise there before he hooks up with Tressman. It just seemed like any time a team I cheered for, which is the Ticats, were playing someone, they were playing a Don Matthews team and their team was kicking the Ticats' ass.
Yeah, he was the best. I mean, I think of three coaches when I think of 90s CFL football. I think of Don Matthews, I think of Wally Buono, and I think of Ron Lancaster. Matthews was, for lack of a better word, he was a cowboy. He, you know, took risks in his coaching, and that's what one of the things that made me like him was. It was never boring to watch a Don Matthews team play because he was always balls to the walls, and you got to respect a guy like that. He was a character. You don't see many guys like that anymore coaching in the CFL. So, yeah, one of the best, and he will be missed for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's fair to say that he was a bit curmudgeonly. I don't think that that's too untowards. I don't think we're insulting the deceased or anything there because he didn't really stick around anywhere long enough for a guy who was that successful. He just never really latched down. I can't even count. I think he coached – I know he coached Baltimore, Montreal, Toronto, Edmonton, B.C., I think that might be it, but he coached everyone. Five Grey Cups as a head coach, won 10 Grey Cups in total, which is incredible when you think about it. But for a guy who was so good, who won everywhere he went, for him never to really stick in one place, it kind of makes, like you mentioned, he's a cowboy. He's a bit of a maverick, did things his own way. And I think that probably rubbed people the wrong way. But, man, all the guy did was win, and you can't do nothing but respect that.
No, you can't. I believe he stayed, you know, maybe, I'm not sure about this, but to me, the longest tenure might have been Montreal, if I remember correctly. Thinking like maybe 5 or 6 years, something like that.
Yeah, because wasn't he was with them when they were the Stallions, and he stayed with them, I believe, and then he left, and then he came back, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So
I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was, I remember Charlie Taff was the head coach there for a couple of years. And I think he moved on. I think Matthews came back. I don't know. I think he had two stints with Montreal.
And it didn't last very long in – or not last very long, but he wasn't around very long in Toronto. I mean, he had the 96 and 97 back-to-back championships. And then after that, I'm not really sure how long he stuck around for.
Yeah, I think he was – I want to say, I think he was gone the next year. Like, I think he left again. It's he had such a nomadic lifestyle as a coach, which coaches do. But like I said, for someone who was that successful to like jump from team to team to team. And like, I think that second stint, wasn't that the second stint with the Argos when he was there with Flutie? Like, did he coach? I'm pretty sure he coached him like late 80s, early 90s as well. I know he wasn't the coach when they won the Grey Cup in 91, but I think he was the coach in 1990.
I'm not sure about that.
You know what? I'm looking him up. I got to do it.
Might have been the Rough Riders head coach in 90.
Oh, that might. Oh, yeah. See, I forgot. I even forgot he was there. So here we go. We got head coach in BC from 83 to 87. Then the head coach in Toronto in 1990. Then he coached the Orlando Thunder. Oh, I guess that was a World League team. He was the Rough Riders coach from 91 to 93. He was with Baltimore in 94 and 95. Toronto from 96 to 98, then Edmonton from 99 to 2000, then Montreal 2002 to 2006, and then he went back to Toronto in 2008. Oh my God, he did. He was the interim coach there for.
Yeah, he was like half a year, and it was terrible.
Yes, I remember that.
Even the Don couldn't resurrect that team. I mean, that was bad.
Yeah, but like, just like, listen, I guess the longest he stayed somewhere was BC early on in his career, 83 to 87, and then it was 1 year in Toronto, and then 3 years in Saskatchewan, and then both years with Baltimore, and then 3 years with Toronto. Like, just never stuck anywhere. And his career coaching record is right here. 231 wins, 132 losses, one tie, 5 Grey Cup titles, 5 times coach of the year, and his longest stint with one team was 5 years. Incredible. Just incredible.
Yeah, that's quite the resume he's got there, and that's not even to mention all the Grey Cup victories he had when he was an assistant coach. So this guy did it all, and you know, when you look back 50 years from now, he'll still be one of the greatest coaches of all time in the CFL.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think we've corrected ourselves from last week's mistake, given the Don his due, and he will be missed both as a coach, although he hasn't coached in quite some time, but as a personality. So to anyone out there who was touched by Don Matthews and all, we send our condolences your way. He will definitely be missed.
Absolutely.
So speaking of giving people their due, how neat was it for you to log on to CFL.ca late last week and see your name on there as they gave a little publicity to our little podcast here and the podcast across the league and the Canadian Football Podcast Network? It was pretty cool, wasn't it?
It was very cool, you know, for them to give a shout out to a lot of the fan-run podcasts is a pretty neat thing. You know, to see Mike Graham on the CFL website is something that I'd never thought I'd see, so it's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, we have our if you're playing the TSN CFL fantasy football game, feel free to sign up and join the CFL Podcast Network group. We got a featured page on there. They reached out to us couple days before they decided to launch the game and asked us if we wanted to be a part of it. And we said yes, obviously. We all kind of got – and this sort of like this podcast – I think I talked about it a couple weeks ago when we launched the idea. It's sort of been a loose affiliation for a while with us and some of the other fan podcasts out there because we're all kind of collaborating and doing this together and helping to promote the league. So we kind of came together just still rather informal but a little more formal than it was before. And now we're starting to make some headway on the CFL website. So pretty neat. Now, I was happy for you because, like, obviously with my work with 3Down, I get a ton of publicity myself. Once again, went to the Argos game, which we'll talk about in a second, with the Ticats on Sunday and got recognized, as I seem to do every time I go anywhere CFL related. And that's not me trying to make myself sound like a big shot or anything. It's just the way it is. If you have a face mm-hmm. that's out there and a voice that's out there, people recognize you and want to say hello and talk to you about the game. So it happens. I always welcome it. I'm not really great talking to people, as odd as that may sound. But hey, if people appreciate what I do and by extension appreciate what you do with this show, I think that's pretty cool. And I was happy for you to finally get, because I think I kind of, again, with my work with 3Down, I think I feel like I'm more of the face, which I'd not by any stretch of the imagination am I trying to do that. But I want you to be more out there. I like the idea that you're getting some rub off this. So I was really happy more for you than I was for myself, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, I get that for sure. It's you know, you write the articles and your face is out there. My face isn't on the website, so like I don't get recognized as much. Plus I'm in Edmonton, so there's not many listeners out here, obviously. So yeah, it was just a really cool thing to see our podcast on CFL.ca.
Absolutely, absolutely. So last week, you and I gave our predictions, which I think if we went back and looked at them after week one, have kind of blown up in our faces a little bit. But we did it. We had fun. And we put the call out there to listeners of the show. Hey, give us your predictions. Who do you think's going to finish where, win awards or win the Grey Cup, whatever have you? And throw them out there. We'll get them on the show. And I got a couple of responses there to that query. So I'd like to throw these out there for you. A couple very loyal listeners to the show, names we've probably mentioned before. One of them is Claudio, and actually he's the guy that that recognized me at the game on Sunday and came and say hello. You probably know him on Twitter or even see him at a game. He's always done up in his face paint, and he's a diehard if there ever was one. So he gave us some awards and a great cup pick, so I'd like to get those out there. Obviously very Ticat heavy. This guy is obviously a huge Ticat fan. He's got Zach Collaros as MOP. He's got Simone Lawrence as the top defensive player. He's got Jerome Messam as the top Canadian. He's got Chris Rainey as the top special teams player. He gave us the most outstanding rookie. He picked Danny Vandervoort from BC. And initially, he sent me a tweet that he had Vandervoort as most outstanding Canadian. And I thought, man, that's a ballsy pick. But he's like, I screwed up. Anyway, he's got Vandervoort as top rookie. And he gave me a Grey Cup pick. He's got the Ticats and the Lions playing in the Grey Cup like you and I had. And he's like me. He's got Ticats going over the Lions. Don't know if he changed that pick after yesterday, but that's who he has.
Both those teams, you know, especially the Ticats, but both those teams didn't look too hot in the first week. So
No, not at all. I think we cursed them.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So the second fan that sent us stuff is a frequent contributor to the show, Adam. He absolutely gave us some picks, and he didn't give us a Grey Cup pick, but he gave us his standings prediction. So we'll get to those in a second. But first, he gave us his award winners. He's got Jonathan Jennings winning MOP. He's got Solomon Alamimian winning top defensive player. He had Alex Singleton as most outstanding Canadian. When I saw that, I was like, that is, why did I not think of him? He's going to be a tackling machine out there in Calgary. Calgary's going to win a lot of football games. He's going to be in the conversation. As soon as I saw it, I was like, man, we effed up not putting him on there. He's got Chris Rainey as the top special teams player, and he gave us the most outstanding lineman pick, Stanley Bryant. That's pretty ballsy. It's tough picking those linemen, but he's got Bryant there. He feels pretty solid in that. And his standing predictions were in the East, he had Ottawa finishing at 10-8. He had Hamilton at 10-8 finishing in second place. Toronto at 6-12 in third. Montreal at 6-12 in fourth. And then out West, he's got Calgary at 14-4. BC at 12-6, Winnipeg at 9-9, Edmonton at 9-9, Saskatchewan at 6-12, and much like all predictions, with that stupid tie that happened this week, they're all blown up because I don't think anyone predicted, or at least put down predictions where there would be a tie. And after 1 week, we can tear up those predictions from last week and just go, we didn't know what the hell was going on, because a horrible week of predictions.
Yeah, but. It's so hard to predict, especially in the first week. I mean, Hamilton played crappy and BC didn't look too good, but they could both turn it around. So, you know, can't throw it out with just 1 week in the books.
No, for sure, for sure. It was illuminating and a little disheartening to see some of the results just because you're so sure about things and then you're not so sure anymore.
Toronto looked great, and I believe I had them last in the East, so now I'm kind of thinking that they will not be last in the East.
Yeah, so why don't we just get right into the game review then, Mike? I don't really know any other way to put this, but the Ticats got absolutely throttled by the Argos on Sunday afternoon to the score of 32-15. And to be fair, that score really flatters the Tabbies. Really, there's no way to sugarcoat this, Mike. Ticats were awful. They were simply awful.
They were pathetic. It was embarrassing to watch. I mean, this team just didn't perform well at all. You're right about the score. There should have been two more touchdowns on the scoreboard for the Argonauts, because Jeff Fowler drops one in the end zone that should have been caught, and Posey, I believe, dropped another one. So Ricky Ray's numbers should have been even better than what they were, and that's pretty damn scary.
Yeah, the game was, I believe, 15-12 at halftime. Ticats scored on a blocked field goal with seconds remaining in the half. We'll get to that in a little bit. But that going into halftime, thinking, okay, they get the blocked field goal. Maybe that's a momentum turner. They were in a game that they had absolutely no business being in. It should have been 28-3, if not more, by that point with the way the Argos were playing and the way the Ticats were playing. So to go into halftime down just three was a miracle. It was a goddamn miracle. And then what's the first play of the second half? Long bomb for a touchdown. It's right then and there I was like, this game is over. I know that it's the CFL and anything can happen and it's not over till it's over. We saw it earlier in the week when Calgary was down 14 with 6 minutes left and they came back and tied that game. Nearly said win that game, but we know that didn't happen. So anything can happen. But with the way the Ticats played, both offensively and defensively, there was just no way they were going to make a comeback in that game.
No, they struggled mightily on both sides of the ball. So to think that they were going to come back was silly because they just couldn't put a drive together and they could not stop the Argos.
No, let's talk about the offense first like we always do. And this is really just – this is going to be quick and hopefully painless, like a Band-Aid. I'm just tearing this thing off. But first and foremost, we got to talk the offensive line. I don't think they gave Zach Kolaros any time at all to make plays. And then whenever he would get protection, he had his passes batted down. Seriously, how many times did an Argo defender get their hands on the ball? I stopped counting at four. I don't know how many more there were after that, but it was incredible to see him. He saw guys there were, and you could see where he was going and why he was going there. And then all of a sudden the ball hits the turf. It was just he had a bad game all in all. Just that was not the Zach Kolaros performance that we are used to seeing when he's fully healthy, and he just looked bad. The offensive line looked bad, and that's my big takeaway from this. Those two areas just did not look good, and if that offensive line, which we were praising just a week ago, doesn't get a little bit better going into the next game against Saskatchewan, I don't know if Zach Kolaros is going to last the season.
No, and it just shows that the preseason, you know, don't judge anything on the preseason because it doesn't mean anything, okay? I was concerned all offseason about the offensive line, and yes, it's only one game, but they showed that they're not very good at this point. I mean, Swindle on the left tackle position or right tackle position was getting burned all game from what I saw. You know, there was a talented defensive line that the Argos have, but you're right, Kolaros had no time whatsoever. I'm not just going to pick on Swindle because that whole line was collapsing. Just play after play after play. Kolaros couldn't do anything. I don't know if you saw, but in the first or second quarter, he came off the field screaming at Ken Austin. I've never seen that before. So Kolaros was pissed about the offensive line, I'm pretty sure, and he had a right to be. They just didn't protect him. And I have the same concern as you. If this offensive line doesn't improve, Zach's going to get hurt. I don't know what's going to happen, but you just can't take hit after hit after hit like that. It's very concerning to see.
I didn't see it at the time. I obviously saw it later on, but yeah, he came off the field screaming something along the lines of, I have no effing time to work, which is about as succinct as you can get. I agree with him, completely agree with him. He had no time back there. And like I said, every time he did, the Argo defenders were getting their hands up and knocking balls to the turf. And then you had, like, he would find guys. He hits Luke Tasker right in the hands. Tasker bounces off him, interception. Like, normally a guy like Tasker who's so sure-handed, there was just nothing there for this team. They couldn't move the ball at all. Their best drives were basically when the game was already decided. If I had to come up with one positive from this game on the offensive side of the ball, I guess I would say it was Mike Jones. Four catches for 70 yards for the guy who's playing that wide side receiver position. Those are pretty good numbers. I'm not sure if he had any drops. I can't recall, but they went to him. He had the one. Most of those yards came on the one deep pass when Kolaros actually had time to make a throw. But I guess that's really it. Outside of that, I don't really have much in the way of nice things to say. It was just awful. Just an overall awful performance from the offense. There's absolutely nothing to really sink your teeth into here. It was just bad.
And I remember we were talking about Mike Jones not too long ago about the potential he has in that position for Kolaros to really air out the ball. And we saw that potential come to fruition with that 49-yard gain by him. So hopefully this is the start of a good season for Mike Jones. And we talk about it year after year after year. CJ Gable, 5 carries, 9 yards. I mean, come on. What else do we have to say about that? I don't even want to talk about it because it's just, you know, you just predict, it's so predictable. The guy just doesn't have enough touches to do his thing. And when he did touch the ball, he didn't do much, but 5 carries just, it isn't enough.
Well, there's nothing to talk about, which is why we don't talk about, like, it's a waste of both of our breaths. We've been doing this now. This is the third season that you and I have been sitting down reviewing Ticat games, talking about what happened. And it's the third season where we have been beating down the door of give Gable the ball. And whether it's in the passing game or in the running game, that guy needs to get involved, and he never does. And it's gotten to the point now where I'm not even going to bother thinking about the run game or discussing the run game until we start seeing CJ Gable get the ball more, because otherwise it's a waste of our time to talk about it, a waste of the listeners' time to listen to it. And there's nothing more that I really want to talk about on the offensive side of the ball. So if you don't mind, let's get this defensive cluster F out of the way too.
All right, let's do that.
Is there anything nice to say about the defense?
I mean, they had some pressure at times, and they had three sacks, one by Chick, one by Coleman, and another by Capicotti. Now, that's about it. I mean, the secondary was just torn apart. Now, let's keep in mind that we didn't have three of our starters in the secondary, with Butler, Steven, and Abdul-Kanne. Abdul-Kanne, obviously the big pickup that we had in the offseason. Now, they did some work to try to fix that secondary, but without those guys, they look pretty damn bad. Pretty damn bad.
SJ Green made him look foolish, and I know he does that to a lot of teams, but no matter who they put on him, they couldn't cover him. He was making one-handed catches. He was leaping over guys. I don't know why the Montreal Alouettes traded this dude, but, way to go.
They made a mistake.
Way to go, Kate.
They made a mistake, it looks like. I mean,
oh, my God, what a stupid call.
The whole receiving core had a day. Three receivers over 100 yards, Posey, Fuller, and SJ Green. Posey had almost 150 yards through the air. Yeah, I mean, the defensive line had pressure at times, but the Ricky Ray that we saw yesterday was impressive. This guy was throwing the ball downfield. Dunnigan said on the after show or whatever, you know, this isn't Tressman, Milanovic came from Tressman's coaching staff and all that, but their offenses are a bit different because Milanovic, as Dunnigan said, was the dink and dunk show. Tressman looks like he's telling Ray to throw the ball downfield, and it's coming out quick, and it's impressive. So, yeah, the defensive secondary, the whole defense was picked apart yesterday.
Well, when you can throw the ball within 800 feet of one of your receivers, and you know he's going to come down with it 99 times out of 100, it makes it easy to just throw up those long balls. Like, there was one I remember, I can't remember at what time in the game it was, but Ray, there's a little bit of pressure. He literally just kind of threw it off his back foot, threw it up in the air, and SJ Green went up and got it. And it's like, when you can't stop something like that, like the one-handed catches, he's been making those for almost a decade now in this league. And the big one that he had against Hamilton on Sunday, Simone Lawrence was guarding him. So it's not like Lawrence is a defensive back, but SJ Green is going to make those catches. That's not the last one-handed highlight reel catch we're going to see from SJ Green this year. But just like my big problem with the defense, and I'm sure you caught this as well, was how often this team on first down would make a stop or get the Argos to lose yards, get the Argos in second and long, second and 8 to like second and 15, and you're like, okay, they get a stop, they get off the field, they get the punt, and almost every time the Argos would pick it up, it'd be a huge play. And it's like when you're setting yourself up with the other offense being second and long, and you allow them to pick it up over and over and over again, that's demoralizing for a defense. It's disheartening as a fan, and it just makes you shake your head and go, how do you allow this? But it seemed like every single time, and it probably wasn't every single time, but that's what it felt like, that the Argos had a second and long situation, they found a way to get a first down, and it was that to me was the biggest sort of takeaway from the defense in my mind, just how they could not stop the Argos in second and long.
Yeah, and that's nothing new. I mean, it seems like for years now, you know, Orlando Steinhauer ran a great defense, and we've had good defenses in the past couple years here, but it seems to me like the second and long has been a problem for this defense for several years now. So that's not really surprising to me, necessarily. I wonder if Steinhauer and Reinbold take similar schemes on second and long, so that's why we will continue to see this. But if we continue to see this, there's going to be a big problem. this season?
Well, I wrote a piece for Three Down Nation that was published on Sunday. And what I did is I looked at Reinbolt's tenure in Montreal. That was his one stint in the CFL as defensive coordinator. And I looked in and I did a little research. And thank you to Mark Fulton, our stats guy, been helping me out for years. I asked him if he had any sort of numbers on the Owls defense for 2012. He did send it to me. I looked over the numbers, and the two things that popped out to me in the negative were that Reinbold's defense in Montreal gave up a lot of touchdowns, and it gave up a lot of yards through the air. And what did we see this week? We saw the Toronto Argonauts score the most points of any team in the CFL this week, and Ricky Ray passed for the most yards. Over 500 yards. You mentioned it a little earlier. Ricky picked him apart. This is a Ricky Ray we haven't seen in 10 years. It's almost like he was like a 27-year-old quarterback back there. But if you read that piece or remembered what Reinbold did in 2012 with the Owls, this really shouldn't come as any surprise to you that they got picked apart through the air.
Yeah, that's very concerning. I'll hold my judgments until, you know, our healthy secondary is together and we have all our pieces. But it is very concerning. Just the pure numbers they put up, I mean, 500 yards through the air, and it should have been 3 touchdowns for Ricky Ray. So that's very troubling.
Yeah, and obviously, again, we have to stress, and you said it earlier, it's the first game. We're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. We're not saying the Ticats lost this game. They look bad. That's it. They're done. They're out for the year. This isn't going to happen. They're going 0-18. Everyone's getting fired. Everyone's getting traded. Everyone's getting cut. We're not doing that at all. Because a couple years ago, when this team came off a Grey Cup appearance, they went into Saskatchewan and got absolutely obliterated by the Riders in the home opener. And then they had a pretty piss-poor start to the season that year. They rebounded in the second half, won 9 games, got back to the Grey Cup, won the division and got back to the Grey Cup. So one game does not a season make, but it was very disheartening to watch this team put up what felt like almost no resistance and no effort. It was just a slog to get through. And I sat there at BMO Field and wanted to be anywhere else in the world but sitting in my seat at watching that game.
It was pretty much torture to watch, man. It brought me back to when the Ticats were a really bad team. But I don't think they are this year, but that was a bad performance. So I think we should just move on from it.
Before we move on, though, I think we should talk about special teams, because this was actually the one part of the team that we could say, hey, they were pretty good. I think first and foremost, we have to start off with Will Hill, who I think even on defense, I thought he was a player. He had 7 tackles. I thought he played great, but obviously it was special teams where he contributed 2 blocked field goals. That's the first time in 15 years that someone has done that. It's only the 10th time in CFL history. And the one block, the one at the end of the second quarter, was the big block that was recovered by Richard Leonard, I believe is his name, if I'm not mistaken. I'm looking him up just to make sure. I don't want to get his name wrong. Yes, Richard Leonard. He recovered the block and took it to the house for the Ticats' only touchdown on the day. Like I mentioned earlier, that was maybe this is a spark the team needs. It didn't end up happening. But you got to give it up to Will Hill. I thought he had an amazing game. If there's one player to take out of this game and said this guy was on his game, it was number one.
Yeah, and we all wondered why Dominic Ellis was let go, and maybe this is the reason, because Will Hill is a big-time player who makes big-time plays. He sure did in that first game. That was the only reason why I had hope at all going into the second half, was because of that block field goal and the return by the guy you mentioned. What's his name again?
Richard Leonard.
That guy. So hopefully he can continue this going forward on defense and special teams, because that was a hell of a first performance for him in the CFL.
I also thought the coverage and return units were actually really good for this team. I thought the returners had some room to make moves. Not all the time, obviously, but I thought that Speedy B had a couple nice returns. Nothing, you know, huge, but I really did think the coverage units were great. The Argos barely got anything on their returns. I thought that that the coverage units were especially good. And we got to talk about Sergio Castillo, because there's a lot of concerns about, what are the Ticats and the kicking game, blah, blah, blah. He wasn't tested often, but he went 2 for 2 on field goals. I think he had a decent day punting the ball as well. And in a week where we saw a lot of established kickers miss some clutch kicks, hey, our guy went 2 for 2, so I can't be too upset.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy about that. I was stressing about the kicking game coming into the season, and he did well at 2 for 2 on field goals. He had 6 punts with an average of 42.8, which isn't spectacular, but his long was 54, so that's a really good number. So yeah, I was really happy with Castillo, and the special teams unit for blocking in front of Brandon Banks was decent. His long was 27 yards, which is a good return, and he doesn't have to bring it back to the house every game. We just want good field position, and hopefully this is a start to some of that happening, because we're going to need it from Banks this year, I think.
Yeah, and the thing with the punts, too, is I don't know if they mentioned it during the broadcast, but it was windy in one direction, and I'm not sure how many punts Castillo made into the wind, but it was a pretty forceful wind. Like, you saw at times that the flags and the goalpost were perpendicular to the post themselves. So if he had a few punts that way, that probably lowered the average. But I think all in all, we can say if there's one positive to take out of this game, it was special teams. But Mike, I think you're right. I think now, after we've said this, it's time to bury this game and let's move on. Unfortunately, we have to move on to Ticats news. And to start off, it's some bad news, and that is it looks like Terrence Tolliver is going to be out for the season with a torn ACL, suffered very, very early in the game against the Argos. I think it was, the second play from scrimmage the Ticats had. I think he catches the ball, takes a pretty hellacious hit, and from what I was told by people who were at the game, maybe you saw this on TV, but he was taken off, he was on the bench, and people were consoling him. Teammates were coming up and tapping him on the shoulder. People said it was very reminiscent of when Zach Caleros tore his ACL a couple of years ago. So to hear this news is not a surprise, but man, oh man, is it a bummer, because I expected a huge year from Tolliver and doesn't even get out of the first possession without being lost for the year. This sucks.
Yeah, it does really suck. Potentially our best receiver. He had the potential to put up big numbers this year, and it's not to be, you know, it's terrible to see, especially so early in the season. He didn't even have a chance to put up any numbers whatsoever, contribute anything to this team. I hope he recovers well, and he comes back and he's stronger than ever, just like a guy like SJ Green looks like he is. So it just sucks to see that.
Yeah, there's no way to sugarcoat it, man. There's just you see a guy like that who you know has all the talent in the world and could be one of the best receivers in the league, and just, man, this team just can't seem to get away from this injury problem. It's year in, year out, this team. I don't know what it is with this squad. I don't know if we're snake bitten. I don't know if it's something they're doing in their training, but they tried to adapt their training camp regimen to avoid injuries in training camp, and they did a decent job, not a great job, because as we talked about, Davis was out, Kane was out, Butler still hasn't come back. They did get some guys injured, but man, to get into the first game and to lose a player the caliber of Tolliver, what is it going to take for this team to get out of a year healthy?
It just seems like a bunch of bad luck. I mean, you can do all that stuff in training camp, you know, the recovery days and all that, and I praise them for it. I think it was a great idea. I think it's forward thinking. I think it's awesome. But once you get on the field, anything can happen, and you can't really do anything about that. It's just bad luck.
Another piece of Ticats news is the team signed another defensive back. They picked up Aaron Berry, who was late of the Toronto Argonauts. Played for them last year. I thought had a pretty good season. He was one of those guys I think we talked about with the cuts. He was one of those guys where it was like, I was a little surprised that he was let go. But you got to think, maybe this guy's going to see some time pretty soon with the way that Ray shredded the Ticats secondary. Maybe Berry could get in there as early as the next game against the Riders, don't you think?
I guess it depends on how many players come back, or I don't know what exact position Berry plays, but you know, any talent you can add to the secondary is a good thing. I think we got a lot of talent in the secondary. Obviously, it didn't show last game, but once those healthy players come back, I think we'll be okay. I'm more concerned about the offensive line because there's not a lot of depth there, and they perform poorly, as we talked about in the last game.
Yeah, I do have more faith that the secondary will get fixed when guys come back. We know what Davis and Kane and Butler can do, so I'm not as concerned. But in the interim, if those guys are going to be out for a little while, a guy who does have experience over a couple of guys that the team has in the secondary that are rookies, maybe he could be a steady, calming influence. Maybe he could be a guy that's been there, kind of help out, maybe take a little bit of a leadership role even with the guys, who knows. But again, I'm not as concerned about the secondary as I am about the O-line like you, but in the immediate right now, it would be nice to get a veteran on the field that's that has a good season in his rearview mirror and is still a young player and could probably give a pretty good team pretty good production at the quarterback position.
Yeah, and you never know if he comes in and those players are still out. Maybe he earns a spot in the starting role if he plays really well. So, yeah, like you said, in the short term, it's a very good thing, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, now it's time to get to some fun stuff. We're going to talk the TSN Top 50. We're going to start with the Ticats, then we're going to get into some league stuff in regards to this. But these lists, we all know, they're put out, and they're meant to stir up controversy and stir up conversation. So you and I right now, we're getting right into it. But the Ticats had a few players make the list. John Chick was their top player. He was voted as the 10th best player in the CFL. Luke Tasker, Emmanuel Davis, Ted Laurent, Simone Lawrence, and Zach Caleros all made the list as well. Tasker was 43rd, Davis was 41st, Laurent was 26th, Lawrence was 14th, and Caleros was 11th. So six Ticats made the list, which is nice, but there were a few guys. Now, I'm not saying all these Ticats should have made the list, but there were a few guys that are Ticats that I was surprised didn't make the list. Terrence Tolliver was one of them. I thought he had a really good season last year, and I think his numbers support that, and I'm surprised that he didn't find someone into that like back 10 that 40 to 50 range. Abdul Kane was another guy. He was like 27th last year, and if you go look at his numbers, I wrote a piece for Three Down on the Snubs, and his tackles were about the same. He had a few less interceptions, but that's because teams stopped throwing his way, and he falls completely off the list. I thought that was really, really suspect. And last but definitely not least, Andy Fantuz. I know it was, there's been some talk that maybe Fantuz wasn't eligible for the list because he's not technically a player, but he hasn't announced his retirement. We all know he's going to come back to play. He basically said as much when he signed on as, with the front office role with the team, and with over 100 catches and over 1,000 yards, I don't see any reason why Andy Fantuz was not on this team. Mike, do you have any snubs of your own? Do you agree with the three guys I mentioned? Is there someone else that you thought might be on there?
No, I think the three guys that you mentioned would be near the top of my list, especially Tolliver and Kane. I thought Kane was awesome last year. Like you said, the numbers were pretty much similar, and he was on the list the year before, so I don't really understand that. And Tolliver, if DeVaris Daniels is on the list, I don't see why Terrence Tolliver isn't on the list as well. Now, the Fantuz thing, I'm going to say yes, he deserved to be on the list because of the numbers he put up in, 10, 11 games or whatever it was last year. He was near the top of the league. He was one of the best receivers in the league when he was in there. But, he's not going to play this year much, if at all. So I can kind of see why they left him off the list.
Well, Kane was also voted by his peers as the top lockdown corner in the CFL. So he's considered by the players of the league as the best like shutdown defensive back, and he's not considered one of the top 50 players by the people who watch it. There's a disconnect there, no?
Yes, you'd have to think so. I mean, you got to take the players' perspective more than just someone watching on TV, because they're down there. They know who's the best. They know who the best players are in the league. So yeah, there is a disconnect there for sure.
So that's all the Ticats stuff we could talk about, but let's keep talking about the top 50, because we got some CFL news. It's pretty shallow this week, but top 50 stuff is still on our mind. I'm not going to run through the whole top 50 list because I think that'd be a waste of time. I just want to ask you, what players do you think? I got two questions for you. What players do you think made the list that shouldn't have, and what players didn't make the list that you think should have? I wrote a piece about both for Three Down. I got ripped in both of those for my picks. I was called a homer because I had too many Ticats on one. I was told that I hate Winnipeg and Justin Medlock, or I'm jealous of Justin Medlock because he plays for Winnipeg, and you will not find a larger supporter of Justin Medlock than myself. I love Justin Medlock, but I said he should have made the list over a bunch of the guys. Like, I had a list of 10 guys, Brandon Whitaker. Like, we'll get into my snubs and your snubs, and you're going to see the same guys there. The guys you mentioned are guys that I put on my list, and I was basically like, Medlock's a great kicker. Medlock's one of the best of all time, but he's not better than these guys, and he's not. And I took some heat for that, but let's get you some heat on you. So let's start with the players that didn't belong, Mike. Let's give me a couple of guys that you say made the top 50 but probably didn't deserve to.
I went with Durant and Daniels. Now, Durant has been a hell of a player in this league. He's a Grey Cup champion, starting quarterback. I just think that he hasn't played enough in the last couple of years. He, the 2 years before last year, he only played one or two games, I believe. And last year he got in and, he played okay, but it wasn't overwhelming. So that's why I think Durant shouldn't be on the list. And Daniels, just because we haven't seen enough from him, plain and simple. Now, he was amazing in those 11 games he played or 10 games he played. But to be a top 50 player, I think you need to see more from him.
Did you read my three-down piece, Mike? Because I had both those guys as guys that I didn't think belonged either.
I never read your shit. No, just
I don't blame you. My two guys are quarterbacks. One of them's going to sound absolutely ridiculous after what he did this week, but I think that the list in general is too skewed towards quarterbacks. 8 of the 9 starting quarterbacks made the top 50 list. I'm sorry, but 8 of the 9 quarterbacks in this league, the one quarterback that didn't make the list was Kevin Glenn, but the other 8, the 8 quarterbacks in this league are not of the 50 best players. If you look, the NFL does a top 100, and yes, there are 4 times as many teams in the National Football League, but I don't think you're going to find 16 to 20 of their quarterbacks making the top 100. It's just, to me, I think this skews way too heavily towards quarterbacks. I've thought that for years. Every year you see 7, 8, sometimes 9 quarterbacks make the list, and I think that's ludicrous. So my two picks were quarterbacks, and the first one, I'm going to sound like a complete idiot, but I think Ricky Ray, at the start of this season, now remember, this list came out before what we saw yesterday. I made this choice before yesterday, and I'm going to stick to it. I think going into the season, Ricky Ray, much like you picked with Darian Durant, hasn't played a full season in forever, and I just don't think that going into this year, he should have been considered one of the top 50 players in the game. Still a great player. The guy's going to the Hall of Fame. He's one of the best quarterbacks to ever do it, but going into this season, one of the top 50 players in the CFL? I don't think so. And the other one is another quarterback. It's Matt Nichols. I don't think, much like you mentioned with Davaris Daniels, I don't think we've seen enough of Matt Nichols. He had a cup of coffee with the Edmonton Eskimos as a starter when Mike Riley got hurt a couple years ago. And then he was traded to Winnipeg, and he came in. And don't get me wrong, he came in. He played well for the Bombers. I thought he performed great in the playoff game. But again, I haven't seen enough of Matt Nichols to consider him one of the top 50 players. And I think he finished like 28th. So he's one of the top 30 players. I just don't think Matt Nichols is that guy yet. I need to see more out of him. So two different guys than yours, but for the same reasons, injuries and lack of sort of game film on him. I think they're just too heavily skewed towards quarterbacks. When 8 of the 9 starters in this league make the top 50 players list, I think there's something wrong there.
Yeah, they do lean towards quarterbacks for, as long as they've done this. It's pretty much always been a quarterback, except for the 1 year when it was Alamimian. So I think they just like to put them up there because they want to push those players, they want to push the quarterbacks, the stars of the game kind of deal. But yeah, I don't see any problem with those two guys. Now, the snubs on my end were John Bowman and Marquay McDaniel, two experienced guys, two guys that have proven themselves year after year after year in this league that probably should have been on the list that are still performing at a high rate. Bowman last year, I believe, had 10 sacks on the year, and I'm sure there's much more to his game than just the sack stats. And Marquay McDaniel just keeps producing. He's just Mr. Dependable. He's kind of like Tasker's kind of like him in a sense that he just catches everything that's thrown his way, and he puts up numbers year after year. He's such a dependable guy. So I think that both those guys deserve to be in the top 50.
Two of the most underrated players in the CFL for a very long time, no doubt about it. John Bowman does not get anywhere near the credit he deserves. He was 10th. And again, these are two guys, I will ask you again, you must read my pieces on three down, dude, because those were two guys that I had in my guys that were snub list. And John Bowman was the number 10 player just a year ago, and he went from 19 sacks to 10, and he falls off the list completely. That's crazy to me. Absolutely crazy. Marquay McDaniel, this is the second year in a row he didn't make the list. And I don't know what that guy has to do to get the respect that he deserves. But yeah, those are two absolutely great picks in snubs, because I couldn't agree more. My two snubs, this will come as a surprise to Ottawa Redblacks fans. I'm going to actually say something nice about your team. How does Brad Sinopoli not make this list? His numbers were better last year than they were the year before, when he was named the most outstanding Canadian, which means he was the top Canadian in our league. He finished, I think he was 48th last year. And yeah, 48th out of the list, not all that big a deal. But his numbers were better in 2016 than they were in 2015, and he falls off the list. And my other guy is Brandon Whitaker. He was the Argos' best player last year. He was their nominee for MOP. He was one of only two players to rush for 1,000 yards. There were three running backs that made this list, four if you count Chris Rainey, but Brandon Whitaker was not one of them. But yet he was the second leading rusher in the league. That makes no sense to me. How these two guys didn't get on the list is beyond me. Stop voting in so many goddamn quarterbacks and give some publicity to these guys that do other things. Like the four guys that we were mentioned here, to me, are four of the better players in this league, four guys that are definitely in the top 50. But yet we have to get Matt Nichols and Darian Durant and all these other quarterbacks on this list instead of getting these guys on here. It's insane.
Yeah, and players that were rookies last year and haven't really shown that they're consistent players in this league. You know, there was a lot of those guys. So yeah, I'm with you on those are good picks as well.
Okay, so last bit of CFL news is the Montreal Alouettes have signed a quarterback, and they have signed Drew Willey. Mike, I have one question for you. Why?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, let's take a look at the quarterbacks they have on that team. Obviously, Durant and Vernon Adams. I can't think of this third-string guy. Do you know him?
Is it Schiltz? Schlitz? Schitz? I can't remember what his name is.
Right, he was in the preseason, yeah. But I don't know. Maybe just to bring in more experience. You know, Vernon Adams doesn't have that much. Drew Willey doesn't have a ton, really, but more than Vernon Adams. So, yeah, it's a bit of a head-scratcher, but the only real answer I could have for you is experience.
Is experience doing something really badly, really, really experience you want on your team? When's the last time Drew really, really looked like a guy that was capable of being not just a starter in this league, but being a contributing member of the he hasn't looked good in over two. He never looked good, really never looked good in Winnipeg. He had flashes where he looked great and then just stunk the joint out. And it's been a long time since Willie Peg and the Drew Willey hype was around. And I just don't know what this guy's got left in the tank, Mike.
Yeah, I don't know either. He seemed to have lost his confidence over the last couple of years. So I honestly didn't think that he'd be back in the league so quickly, just the way that he exited, the way that he got cut by the Argos and, you know, traded from Winnipeg and all that stuff. He just seems like a broken quarterback. So, yeah, I don't know. He might be the second or third, or he'll probably be the third stringer. So is he going to take a lot for him to claw his way back to respectability in this league?
Okay, Mike, do you have a bozo for us this week?
I do not. I have, you know, I wouldn't go full on bozo, but I was thinking that the Darian Durant celebration at the end of the game in week one against the Rough Riders, his old team, was a bit over the top just because he didn't really perform that well. And the only reason they lost was because of a missed field goal by the Rough Riders kicker. So I thought that was a bit too much, but it's not enough for me to go full on bozo, but I know that you have one in mind.
Oh, I do have one. I got to give this week's bozo, in my estimation, to both the CFL Command Center and Glenn Johnson. I actually thought the refereeing this week, the on-field officials, were great. I don't think there was really any sort of controversial call that was missed. I think they did a hell of a job, and I got to get that out there because I think the refs take too much heat when crap like this happens. Twice in the first two games, we saw calls that I don't know how anyone, especially with the ability to watch in slow motion, could screw these up so badly. I'm talking about the Bakari Grant fumble that was called a touchdown on Saskatchewan. That was clearly he had lost control of the ball before he goes into the end zone. And the second was a Kamar Jordan fumble. Now, he had two in the game against Ottawa. The first one was one where very similar to Bakari Grant's fumble, actually, except I think they got that call right. Looks to me like the tip of the ball breaks the front of the end zone before the ball is jarred loose. But there was a second one where he had a big catch late in the game, and he fumbles the ball. And when it initially happened, I thought, no, he was down, and then he fumbled. And then they showed the replay, and it does not look like his knee was down. And both those calls were upheld. It was catch and down by contact for Jordan and a touchdown for Grant. And I thought that are we in for another crazy, idiotic season when it comes to Command Center results? Apparently we are, because just a couple of days later, Glenn Johnson, through Farhan Logi at TSN, said, basically, you better get used to this, because the Command Center is only going to be overturning calls that are deemed egregious. Now, I don't know what their standard for egregiousness is, but if these two calls don't meet that standard, I think we are in for a very long, very frustrating season when it comes to Command Center and replay.
I don't even know why they bother with it if they can't make those calls, turn over those calls that were missed on the field or whatever. I mean, if it's obvious to the viewer at home, it should be obvious to the people in the command center, making those important calls. It's really disappointing, that we have to talk about this in the first week of the season, two blown calls. It's just, like you said, I thought the refereeing was good on the field. I thought the flow of the games were really good. I thought there were less penalties than usual, which I absolutely love. But yeah, it just sucks that we have to talk about these two controversial calls, and it's the first week has just ended.
Yeah, I saw someone complaining about penalty calls. I think it was the BC Edmonton game, and someone was saying, "Oh, it'd be great if the referees would allow these guys to play." But every penalty that I really saw call, I didn't have an issue with. And to me, it's maybe the players need to learn the rules and stop breaking the rules, and then we won't see as many penalties. Now, sometimes, refs can get a little flag happy. I did not see that this week. I like I said, I think the refs get most of the time get an A+ here, but the command center, man, and if this is the standard that's set and this is what it's going to be going forward, we're going to be dealing with these guys in this section a lot this year, because there's no way that this isn't going to go badly.
Yeah, we have to talk about it, because these are plays that determine the outcome of the game at times. It may not be the only reason why one team won or lost, but it's a big deal within the game. So we have to talk about it, and hopefully we don't have to talk about it a lot going forward, but I have a feeling that we will.
Well, Saskatchewan's touchdown didn't have an effect on the outcome of the game, but that was their lone touchdown of the night, and if that doesn't count and it's rewarded as Montreal's ball as it should have been, that game probably turns out a lot different. It's not as close as it was, one point differential Montreal win. The Kamar Jordan fumble absolutely it definitely definitely affected the outcome of the game, because it was late in the game. Calgary wanted to score a touchdown on that drive. Jordan fumbles that ball. Ottawa gets it back. Now, Calgary would have had time. But Ottawa likely would have been able to milk some time off the clock, and maybe Calgary doesn't have enough time to make the comeback. Who knows? Just to see that, again, with controversial command center rulings, it's just disheartening, because I was hoping that over the offseason they would fix it. It looks like they did, but I think they fixed it in the wrong way.
It's terrible to see when it's so obvious. I mean, come on, guys. Let's get it together here. Why is this so hard to get right? Why?
If every fan sitting at home is screaming the call is wrong, including fans of the team that got the advantage on the call, I saw Ryder fans and Stamps fans saying, no, that was the wrong call. And when Ryder fans are gaining from something and saying, no, we were given that one, it's a bad call. You know that they screwed that up. So, I think we're just going to be dealing with these things throughout the season. Hopefully this is the last time, but I don't see it. I think we're going to be dealing with controversies like this for a long time. And if this is the case, the argument to scrap replay altogether grows stronger and stronger in my mind. All right, so that's all I really have to say about that, Mike. Let's move on. We got no Ticats game to preview this week because the Cats are on a bye. So, we'll be back with a preview next week when the team heads into Saskatchewan to take on the Rough Riders. So we're going to skip ahead of any sort of game preview. Just get right into our game picks. Mike, we got four games this week, as always. Thursday night, the week kicks off with the rematch of the rematch, the rematch of the tie. We've got the Ottawa Redblacks heading into Calgary to take on the Stampeders. Who do you got in this one? Or are you ballsy enough to pick a second tie?
Ooh, no, I'm not that ballsy. I'm going to go with the Stampeders because they just don't lose at home.
Yeah, same here. I think last year we saw these two teams tie in Ottawa, and then they went and played in Calgary, and Calgary absolutely obliterated them. I see something very similar happening. I think Ottawa's better than what I expected, but Calgary's still Calgary, and I think they'll course correct, and I think they'll get a big win at home on Thursday night. Friday night sees a doubleheader. We got the first game in Toronto as the Argos host the BC Lions. Mike, we talked about how BC didn't really perform very well last week. We talked about how both of us were pretty high on the Argos. Where are you leaning on this one?
Now this is a tough one to pick because BC looked poor. Toronto looked great. I'm gonna stick with the Argos. I'm gonna go with the Argos taking, winning again against a tough BC team.
Okay, so for the first time all year, you and I are disagreeing. I am gonna take the Lions. I think Toronto looked as good as they did, and I think they're better than we all thought, but they were playing a really bad Ticats team. this week, the Ticats just didn't come to play, period. Now, full credit to the Argos for the victory, but the Ticats were awful. And I think BC, I think they did enough. The reason that game ended in a BC loss was there was a complete brain fart at the end where they allowed Brandon Zylstra, for some reason, to get behind the defense and nearly score a touchdown. How the hell that happened, I have no idea. But I still think I just have too much faith in Wally Buono. I like the BC Lions too much with the talent they have on that team to start the season 0-2. So I am going to take the BC Lions in this one. The second half of the doubleheader takes place in your neck of the woods, Edmonton, as the Eskimos host the Montreal Alouettes. The clash of the two teams with 1-0 records. Mike, who do you got in this one?
I'm going to go with the Eskimos. The problem with the Eskimos last year was mostly their defense, secondary in particular. And I think they've improved over the offseason, even though they didn't make a ton of moves that I can recall. But they still got a very strong defensive line. They lost JC, which is terrible for them. But I still think the defensive unit has improved, and the offensive unit is still really good. So I'm going to go with the Eskimos.
I'm taking the Eskimos as well. I'm still not entirely sold on Montreal's offense. They only scored 17 points against the Riders, who many said had one of the worst defenses in the league. They were starting a lot of rookies in the back end there, and while there were some plays made, I don't think there was enough. I think Montreal's offense is going to take a little time to gel. I think that defense is not as good as they were last year. They did look pretty good against Saskatchewan, but it's Saskatchewan, so we don't really know what to make of that. But the Eskimos look good. It looks like they're going to be able to score a ton of points. And every game they're in, I think, is going to be a bit of a shootout. So give me the Eskimos at home. Last game of the week on Canada Day, the opening of new Mosaic Stadium. You know the crowd's going to be raucous in Saskatchewan as they host their bitter rival, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Mike, who do you like on Saturday on Canada Day in the opener at Mosaic?
I got to go with the Riders. Winnipeg's a good team, I think. Saskatchewan's questionable at best, but I think they're going to, you know, pull from all that emotion and all that noise that crowd's going to make, and I think they're going to pull out the win.
Couldn't agree with you more, except the part about Winnipeg being good. I don't have any faith in the Bombers, but I think they're the sacrificial lamb here. I think no matter who you put in this position, I think you could put Calgary there, and I think I'd still take the Riders this game. The crowd, it's going to be pumped. They're going to be loud. It's going to be full. They're going to want to show off this new barn to the world. They're going to want to get off on a right foot, get that good mojo at New Mosaic. I think the Riders win this one. I think they win it rather handily. I'm not going to say they're going to win by, you know, three touchdowns or anything, but I don't think this game's going to be very close. I think the Riders are going to go in there. I think they're going to get out to an early lead. They're going to milk that, and they're going to find a way to get their first W of the season.
I think it'll be close, but Riders get the first win.
All right, so only one game difference between you and I this week. So one of us will have one up on the other come next week.
It shall be me.
Yeah, you're putting your money on the Argos. So you're riding with the Argos. So what, are you an Argo fan this week or something?
I've always been an Argo fan. No, just kidding. No, I am not.
I'm just saying, you're our lone difference is the Argos. Interesting. Anyway, we got some questions this week, Mike. The first one comes from our favorite anonymous rodent out there in Saskatchewan, Fake Gainer. I saw him put this on Twitter and asked someone else, and I hit him up and said, hey, do you mind if I steal this for the pod? He said, absolutely. I said, I really want to hear how Mike decides to go here. So his question I thought was genius, and I'm really looking forward to your answer. So he said, you can build a team by taking any quarterback, kicker, and defensive player from any team, but one of them must be a Canadian. Who do you take? So, Mike, let's go position by position here. Who do you have at quarterback?
I have Mike Riley. Now, that might be surprising to people. I'm a big Claros guy, obviously, but he hasn't shown me a lot recently, and that's not his fault necessarily. But I just love the way Riley plays the game. He's a tough son of a gun. He can sling that ball. He runs the ball. He's a leader on the field and in the locker room, I'm sure. So I got Riley.
I picked Jonathan Jennings mostly for the age factor. Obviously, he's a great player. I'm not surprised in a pick of Riley. There were three guys that I was debating here. It was Riley, Mitchell, and Jonathan Jennings. And I went with the younger of the three. I think the upside is tremendous. And I get a few years on you. You got Riley. If he's in his 30s. You got Mitchell, who's in his later 20s, and you got Jonathan Jennings, who I think is 24, 25. So I'll take the younger guy who's got the tremendous upside to start my franchise. So place kicker, who did you take there?
I got Medlock.
You know what? I will also say that I, too, had Justin Medlock. I think this is a no-brainer pick, but why'd you take him?
He's just a clutch kicker. He has a booming leg. He can hit those 50, 55-yarder, maybe not a 61-yarder as we saw in the playoffs last year, but this guy is just Mr. Dependable. And if you want a game-winning field goal, he's more than likely going to hit it.
Yep, exactly. If you have Justin Medlock as your kicker and he's trotting out for a field goal, you basically can close your eyes or read your phone or whatever because you know he's going to hit it. So no more needs to be said about him. So that leaves us with a defensive player, and neither of us have chosen a Canadian. So both of our Canadians come on the defensive end of the ball. So who did you take as your defensive player?
I took Singleton. Now, like your Jennings pick, this is an age thing as well as a potential thing. I think this guy is going to be a starter in this league for years and years to come. He's a player. He was a player in his rookie season. He'll be a player this season and years down the road. So that's why I picked him.
Okay, so I took Ricky Foley. No, I'm kidding. I had Singleton. And then I thought about it, and I was like, Mike's probably going to take Singleton, so I don't want to say – and I was like, maybe – I thought there was a chance that you and I would pick all three same guys. So I was like, I got to be a little different here. So I went with someone else. I went with Taylor Loeffler. Dude is Craig Butler 2.0, Rob Hitchcock 3.0 because Craig Butler is Rob Hitchcock 2.0. Like, this guy is a stud for the Bombers, an absolute steal in the draft last year. He was awesome a season ago. I think he's got a wonderful 10-year career ahead of him. And look, Alec, you cannot go wrong picking Alex Singleton. He is probably the correct choice. But in the interest of making this a little different, I will go with Taylor Loeffler because I just think the world of that kid.
Yeah, those were the Singleton and Loeffler was the two guys that it came down to. So both tremendous players.
Oh, you weren't going to pick Ricky Foley?
No, he was number three, though.
Oh, yeah, he was. He's number two in our hearts, though, right? Get it? Number two?
Yeah.
Children. Anyway.
I'm not debated yet.
Anyway, okay, second question comes from, no surprise, comes from Adam. Always gives us some good stuff. This is less of a question and more of a game. He gave us some over-under numbers, all Ticats related. So let's start with the first one. He says, over-under starts by Zach Caleros, 14.5. Mike, what do you got?
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to go under. If the first game's any indication of how many times Claros is going to get hit in the backfield, I think he'll be out for – I hate saying this, but I think he'll be under that number.
So I'm going to be the optimist, and despite the fact that we saw him get beat up yesterday, I'm going to take the over. I can't take the under because the under means that he misses at least four games. And if he misses at least four games, I can't see this team being any good. So in the interest of it being the early part of the season and me still having a little bit of faith in this squad, I'm going to take the over. I'm going to probably assume on the next one we're going to be in agreement on this. It is over or under for C.J. Gable's combined rushing and receiving yards, and the number is set at 1,199.5.
Combined passing rushing?
Combined rushing and receiving, yes.
That stuff. I'm gonna have to go with the under. He's so underutilized that I don't believe he'll get to those numbers.
Yeah, which is sad because 1,200 yards is 600 rushing and 600 through the air, or I don't think math. Everyone can figure it out. I'm also taking the under because I just don't think he's going to get used enough to reach those numbers. Maybe he gets 400 to 500 yards rushing and something similar receiving and cracks the 1,000 total yard barrier. But 1,200, nah, I'm going to go under there.
We don't even see enough of him to know if he's still a good player.
Yeah, that's
honest.
True. No,
we
right.
don't. So, yeah, under.
All our love for him stems from 2013, and that was 4 years ago.
Yeah, we just don't know.
Yeah, we just don't know. So yeah, I think under is the right choice. Next, number of 1,000 yard receivers set the over under at 2.5.
I'm gonna go under. I think they'll have two. With Tolliver going out for the year, it's gonna be tough. spin the ball boy, Kevin Elliott. That's starting to really bother me, by the way. I don't like that. He did it in the game this week, and he's going to have a target on his chest because of that. Players are kicking the ball as soon as he starts to spin it. But anyways, I'm getting off on a tangent there. I'm going under.
Yeah, me too. If Terrence Tolliver was healthy, I'd take the over because I think Tasker and Timms, just based on if they play 18 games, they're going to get 1,000 yards because they're going to be targeted enough times to get 1,000 yards. And I'm a guy who, especially recently, has not been as enamored with just 1,000 yards. It's not really that difficult on an 18-game schedule to get 1,000 yards. You need like 55 yards a game to get 1,000 yards. And a guy who averages 55 yards a game, would you say that's an elite receiver? Not really. But yeah, I think with Tasker and Timms, they play a full season. They're going to hit 1,000 yards simply by just being there. But a third one, that's going to be tough because say a guy like Terrell Sinkfield comes back, he's not going to have enough games. I don't think Elliott's a 1,000-yard guy. Who they replace Tolliver with, whether it's Speedy B, a guy on the neg list, or a guy they have on the practice roster right now, I don't know, but I can't see them being a 1,000-yard guy. No chance Mike Jones is a 1,000-yard guy, despite him having 70 yards in the first game. So I think it'd be really hard for them to get to 3,000-yard receivers now that Tolliver will miss the year. Next over-under is the number of offensive linemen to start for the team. The over-under is set at 7.5. What do you got?
I have the over. I think there'll be a couple injuries here and there. Hopefully nothing serious because we obviously don't want to see anyone get hurt. And I think they might tinker around with that Swindle spot maybe if he doesn't pick up his game. So I'm going to go over.
Yeah, I'm going over as well. We saw Ryan Bomben get nicked up at the end of the game. So if he misses a game, they throw in, say, Landon Rice. Now you're already at 6. They have 4 offensive linemen, 1 American on the practice roster. So I could see Lamar Holmes, who they signed, coming in there and taking over for Swindle. And now you're at 7. And should someone get hurt, I think 8 to 9 different offensive linemen wouldn't be a shock. So I, too, have gone with the over. Okay, Mike, last one. This is sacks by the defensive line, over or under 29.5.
I'm going to go over. I think that the defensive line is a solid group. Even the guys that they rotate in, like Capicotti, he had a sack last game. So I think they can rotate in some guys. Atkinson could be one of those guys. I'm surprised that he wasn't a starter the first game.
He wasn't a starter because he was hurt. He was on the one game. He didn't play.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, son of a gun. I did not know that. So, yeah, I'll go with the over. I think defensive line is one of the strengths of this team.
I agree. I'm also going over. We're already 3 sacks in. All the sacks the team got against the Argos were from the defensive line. So now that 29.5, we just need 26.5. John Chick's probably going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 15. So that'll be half of them there. Adrian Tracy's probably.
That's high, dude.
You think?
You think he'll get 15?
He had 14 last year. I don't see why he couldn't get 15.
I'd say more closer to like 10.
Okay, so even 10. That's a third by one player. Adrian Tracy probably picks up 7 or 8 himself. Coleman probably will get, say, 6. And now you got the Canadian guys who can pick up Ted Laurent. Ted Laurent last year had 9. So even if he has a down year, probably picks up 5. Like, I just – with the amount of guys they have and the rotating them in, and I think they did – that's one of the things the team did – mostly due to ratio issues, but I think it's one of the things the team did well against Toronto was rotating their defensive linemen in. Saw 3 different guys get sacks. 2 of them were guys that weren't quote-unquote starters in Capicotti and Coleman. So Atkinson comes back, probably gets 3 himself. So, yeah, I think I don't think they'll fly past it, but I could see the 35 from the defensive line themselves very, very easily.
Yeah, for sure.
And if John Chick has a big year, gets 15, 16 sacks, they'll definitely go over this by a ton.
Easily.
Okay, that was it, Mike. That's the last one. We can finally put this ugly Argos game to bed. This is the last we will ever have to talk about it. So that's the show for this week. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And we are now also on Google Play Music and Stitcher. And as always, you can listen to the show or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to throw us a question, we got some good ones this week. So anyone who gives us a question, you're going to have to come with your A game because these were some fun things to talk about, some fun scenarios to get into. So if you want to throw us a question our way, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats. Yeah, toss some more over unders. I like doing those.
Yeah, that was fun. And hypotheticals, man. These are two great questions. I love the discussion that they brought up, and hopefully we can get more of these going forward. Twitter handle, mine, JoshSmith_82. You can always post the questions if you want in the comments section on 3 Down Nation. That's where I got Adam's over unders. So follow his lead, post them there. And if you want to fire us off an email, you can do that too. We haven't got any emails yet because I think people really don't use email as much anymore now that social media and text messaging exists. So if you're still old like I am and still use an email, you can hit us up. We are at podski@gmail.com. So you want to throw us an email, you can do it there. That was episode 77 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
Now, Mike Graham, eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.